Jason, coming up, we will talk about Thomas Brown, Matt Eberflus, Caleb Williams, and the circus that has come to town this week at Halas Hall. All that and more coming up on Halas Intrigue. Jason, it's another week, another eventful, 24, 36 hours at Halas Hall this time. Shane Waldron was fired Tuesday morning. Thomas Brown, his pass game coordinator, who comes off the same coaching tree, who came here in part to work with Shane, who is probably not all that different as a play caller, is hired to take his place. We talked to Matt Eberflus about why he did it, the way he did it, and we talked to Caleb Williams about whether it would matter. I've set the table here. You pick what direction do we want to start in.
Well, the idea with Thomas Brown is that he will be a different play caller, that he will run things differently. It's not that they're going to change the offense. It will still be the Shane Waldron offense that they've been working on for months. And while, you know, if you'd let Thomas Brown design the offense, it might look similar because they have similar background. And Shane Waldron, in part, hired Thomas Brown to be one of his assistants this year as the passing game coordinator. But you're thinking that personality will make a difference here. You're thinking that the way Thomas Brown runs practice, the way that Thomas Brown communicates, and then also, Pat, his personality as a play caller. If you and I both have the same ingredients to work with, we might make different dishes. Right. And I think that Thomas Brown has an opportunity to show that he has better instincts, better feel for the game. Interestingly enough, he's going to coach it from upstairs, though. I was a little surprised by that.
Yeah, that's Shane Waldron was downstairs with Caleb, and I think there was some thought that one of the changes they'd make would be maybe just move Waldron upstairs, but this is obviously a lot more permanent than that. I feel like Matt Eberflus has made a bed in which obviously there's no way out. Are you good with him making this change? Because it feels like the public wanted him to change, and then he makes the change, and now I've heard feedback, well, this isn't going to work either. There was kind of only one move he could make, I thought, and it was this.
Well, it's a little bit of all of those things. Yeah. Like, what is Thomas Brown supposed to fix being thrown in mid-season with all of these same problems? None of the problems roster-wise, performance-wise, go away with Shane Waldron. Thomas Brown isn't bringing some new offensive line with him or something like that. And if he had the secret to get Caleb Williams playing better, do you think that would have come up by now?
Probably would have offered that in a meeting.
It's problematic that Matt Eberflus ended up in this situation.
Correct.
I think setting that aside, this was the right call. Mm-hmm. This was better than going forward. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable to me that after the Patriots game in which they lost 19-3, Matt Eberflus was asked point blank, are you willing to plow ahead toward your own firing by sticking with Shane? Do you realize how bad it has to get for the question to be asked like that? Mm-hmm. And so he made the move that he should make right now. But the fact that he got into this situation in the first place after they had such a thorough search and a thorough process of sifting through 9 guys that they interviewed, Patrick, and who knows how many that they considered that they didn't interview for this job back in January. And then ultimately it's, well, how about this guy we passed over, Thomas Brown?
Right.
Maybe he can really underscore what a bad decision it was to hire Shane by coming in and doing a better job with the same pieces. That's not good. But Matt Eberflus pivoting and changing play callers right now is not any kind of additional step toward the exit for Matt Eberflus, in my opinion. He's already taken 50 steps that direction over the last 3 years. And he would have just kept on that same track had he kept Shane Waldron. This gives him a chance.
Mm-hmm. Cole Kmet said today that, Thomas Brown, keep in mind, Thomas Brown's a pass game coordinator. Thomas Brown didn't have a whole lot of direct interaction with Caleb Williams this year. And part of it is just the Bears were very intentional kind of about who they wanted working with him and who they wanted in his ear.
For efficiency and organization, not have too many people talking.
Exactly, yeah. And you've got Kerry Joseph, his quarterback's coach, who is, in theory, coaching him. And then you have Shane Waldron, who's coaching the system and the play. So Caleb and Thomas Brown don't know each other that well. But, you mentioned the presentation, kind of the energy of Thomas Brown is very different than Shane Waldron. who Keenan Allen said today was probably too nice in coaching.
Well, we really like Thomas Brown as a guy.
Yeah.
You know, I can't sit here and tell you how Thomas Brown's going to do as play caller, but from the beginning when we've met Thomas Brown and talked to him, there's a great vibe. There's high energy. He's cool. He's a good communicator. Thomas Brown, for people that are maybe unfamiliar with him, Thomas Brown is one of the hot young head coach candidates. He's been a head coach candidate before. He was the assistant head coach on Sean McVay's Super Bowl winning team. Mm-hmm. I mean, Thomas Brown got the job, Pat, as University of Miami's offensive coordinator. And granted, he had a connection, but everyone that gets these jobs does with Mark Richt. He got the job as University of Miami's offensive coordinator at 30.
Yeah.
This guy has been on a skyrocket for his career. This is a guy that a lot of people really think highly of around the league. And while I don't think he can come in and just change everything, I don't think it's going to be a drastic shift, I like his chances better than Shane Waldron.
Cole Kmet said after the meeting on Wednesday that that when Brown was done talking, a couple of guys kind of got up and went, all right, like a little bit of enthusiasm, which maybe at this point of the year, after the last 3 weeks, a little bit of enthusiasm is probably the best you could have possibly hoped for out of a veteran unit that has not been afraid to show their frustration. You know, this idea of Waldron being too nice or whatever, it's not a new thing that somebody just spouted today, Keenan Allen spouted today. What was it, after week three?
This has been leaking out in different subtle ways back to week three.
Right.
Different objections to the way Shane Waldron, the thing, Matt Eberflus loves to talk about outside noise.
Right.
This has been coming from publicly. Mm-hmm. This has been coming from the players since week three.
Yeah, and Mercedes Lewis goes, man, coach us. Like that, like, coach us, please. That was kind of jarring to hear in week three. And then they get it figured out for a couple weeks, and you go, all right, maybe it's fixed. And it very obviously wasn't.
When you lay all that out there, there is something to be learned from looking at how the Bears arrived in this situation and whether Matt Eberflus ever saw that coming. Because every indication from Matt Eberflus has been that he didn't see this coming at all.
Right.
Until last week, until the Patriots game when they lost 19-3. 1 week, how do we go from last week just dismissing this question about changing play callers? No.
Right.
That was how he said it. To this week, fired. And it sounds like now you get into Matt Eberflus's 48-hour evaluation period on this coming off the New England game. And Matt Eberflus, by his own admission, hadn't decided this by the end of Monday. That at the end of the workday Monday, Green Bay week is underway. Did you guys know they're playing the Packers this week? It's barely come up, but they are. That's a pretty big deal. Monday, Tuesday is game planning time for the coaching staff to be able to present that to the players first thing Wednesday morning to start meetings, practice, everything for the week. And Matt Eberflus gets to the end of the day Monday, Pat, and doesn't know what he's going to do yet. And that, to me, is more evidence that he was caught off guard by needing to make this change, didn't see it coming at all. And it's just crazy to me that he could not know by the end of Monday what he wanted to do for the week. And all of that is to say, why in the world would you let him stick around and make another offensive coordinator hire?
I don't think they'll have to answer that at the end of the year, probably. Or let's put it this way. If Thomas Brown is a revelation, then...
If Thomas Brown's a revelation, he gets to be the head coach in my book. Matt goes, Thomas Brown can coach the team. If it's that good,
right,
let him run it.
I did talk about that good. Jordan Love, that's kind of what he did the second half of last year was, he went from having his good days and his bad days to being one of the best quarterbacks in football. He's fallen back again this year, but that's got to be kind of the hope that the Bears have here, that you just get steady progression from the quarterback, win or lose, and that at least by the end of the year, Caleb Williams is what makes this job as attractive as it is, right?
That's true, and it's also really troubling because now everything's on Caleb, which was the complete opposite of what the whole blueprint was this year, was that almost nothing would be on Caleb.
Right.
Everything else would be taken care of. You just do you. You figure it out. It's hard, very hard, coming from college to the NFL, learning NFL offenses, learning NFL defenses, managing everything that comes with being the starting quarterback that doesn't even have anything to do with calling plays, and they are, I mean, snap, making plays. Like there's responsibility in the locker room. There's responsibility publicly. It's Chicago, which is a huge market and a very challenging market for these quarterbacks. We've got everything else taken care of, kid.
Right.
You just worry about getting some footing.
Right.
And that was the plan. Now it's, oh, Caleb, save us.
Yeah.
It's a mess again. It's exactly the thing you were worried about, Caleb, when you were thinking about us drafting you. And that's where we are. Please save us. At 22.
Just turned 22, right?
I think this
week. I'm going to Google.
He's young.
While I Google, you know, Caleb's birthday.
Did you notice, by the way, what did you think of, be honest, what did you think of, this was something that I asked him Sunday after the game. I asked him, is he confident in Matt Eberflus? And his reaction was maybe a little surprised, but then happy, because I feel like he knew the answer to the question.
Yeah.
Am I confident in my head? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's
yes.
My head coach.
Answer's yes. Yeah. What did you think of that exchange?
The tone of it was, why would I tell you if I wasn't? And, I mean, to
yeah,
me.
Yeah.
And he sat there like, yeah, it's my head coach. And you know, you hear sometimes DJ Moore gets caught up in this too, was when you ask about his quarterback. He goes, oh, yeah, he's our quarterback. Like, yeah. As though... And I don't know that they're aware that it's coming out the way it comes out. If you didn't know better, you'd read it as, I'm contractually obligated to back my coach because he is my coach. Thank you.
There's a little bit of that. And he looked like maybe he knew the answer to a test question. And it was like, oh, yeah, that one's yes. The PR staff has already gone over that with me. But my point in bringing up that exchange is that's part of what comes with the job.
Yeah.
As Chicago Bears quarterback, because, I mean, guess what, buddy? That question surfaces about every 2 to 3 years here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Is the coach the right guy?
Right.
And it's so much being put on him. There's so much that he's having to answer. They're trying to teach him high-level quarterbacking play, mm-hmm. much more complicated than what a lot of rookies are playing, and part of that is the stakes. Mm-hmm. You've got a lot of talent here, and this team was trying to go for the playoffs this year. And as he is struggling, everything is put on him to turn this around.
He has to be their spokesman too. And, you know, one of the things I thought Caleb would be really good at, and I think he has been, is, you know, the spotlight here doesn't intimidate him. Like, you know, I mean, he was going to dinner with Denzel Washington when he was in college. Like this is, he had his own, I say this all the time, he had his own bobblehead night at Dodger Stadium. Like, very few athletes on the planet have had the exposure that he had before coming to Chicago, which has, you know, chewed up and spit out a lot of quarterbacks. It is, I think, unrealistic to ask him to have to speak for everybody 9 games into his rookie year, though. And maybe not unrealistic, but it's probably not fair. Is that a good way to put it? I think he could handle it. He's answering a lot of questions about the ship being on fire.
It's fair, but it's a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of what comes with that position, and it is a lot. I think he's aced, in my opinion, the public relations side of this. Mm-hmm. I liked everything he did leading up to the draft. And as he has, and a lot of that was inflating expectations. Mm-hmm. And then as he has not lived up to those expectations, I think he has remained confident publicly, mm-hmm. and also been very cold and objective about his own performance. Mm-hmm. Caleb Williams has taken ownership of his part of this, which he does have a part in this. And let's talk about that. There are some parts of this, there are some things around Caleb Williams that are hampering him. Caleb Williams is struggling in his own way that has really nothing to do with that. It would be easier for him to thrive if some of these things weren't going on. But there are some, you know, he has expectations too. Mm-hmm. We're grading him too. He is not just getting a free pass in all of this. What are you seeing in Caleb Williams' game that he needs to fix?
Statistically, I'm seeing the worst quarterback in football the last 3 weeks. Statistically. Now, the great thing about Caleb, the intriguing thing about Caleb is that he's probably only going to get better, and that's good news. But the problems that I'm seeing, at least, are he's holding the ball way too long.
Huge problem.
We talked to him about it
today.
Cost
them points last week.
Has cost them two of the last 3 games, cost them a field goal by running backwards on a third down sack. He talked about it today, acknowledging, hey, you know, I need to, you know, some of these sacks are on me and I need to get rid of the ball. My fear with an O-line that's been bad, but hopefully will be more healthy this week, is that Caleb's already got some of those bad habits kind of ingrained into him. And the one thing you don't want to do this year, win or lose, is you don't want to screw him up. And a way to screw him up is to have him seeing ghosts every time somebody rushes around the corner because, you know, there for a while he had linemen who weren't blocking well. Screwing him up is not drilling enough into his head that he needs to throw the ball away. And that when he throws the ball away, he needs to do it the right way. There have been, what, two different instances this year where he's had intentional grounding penalties. And you contrast that with Drake May. On Sunday, Drake May did the old Jay Cutler throw it away left-handed thing.
Yep.
And it worked. I'm sure somewhere Will Levis was probably wincing, but it worked. There's that, and I just think his accuracy is not what it should be. And those are two gigantic issues. Pocket awareness and accuracy, if you have those two things down, like, you don't need a whole lot else. And he's not doing well either.
And those are his problems.
Yep.
Those are not problems of Shane Waldron or offensive line or DJ Moore or whatever. Those are problems that Caleb can control.
And then he has to walk into a locker room and deal with frustrated wide receivers who, of course, they're frustrated. He's not.
Everybody's numbers are depressed.
Yes. You know, frustrated tight end group. An O-line that's probably is aware that they're struggling but knows that Caleb's not doing them any favors by not getting rid of the ball when he should have. It's a lot to deal with on an individual level and on a team level.
Matt Eberflus has his fingerprints all over this disaster, but Ryan Poles has some blame here too. And I would sign up for your laughing because I mixed up the Ryans.
No, I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing at the Freudian slip there.
Ryan, this is not Ryan Pace's fault.
Okay.
Ryan Pace, if you're listening,
sorry,
we're not still blaming you for things however many years ago.
You're good now. Yeah, you're fine.
I would have signed up for Ryan Poles' plan or deal or whatever going into the season of you have to match resources with needs as you build a roster, and the resources have matched up to bring in DJ Moore and Roma Dunze and Keenan Allen and DeAndre Swift, but not really matched up at the right times to get offensive linemen in. So we've really stacked everything up at the skill places to help Caleb. We've built a really good defense to help Caleb, and that is still happening, by the way. It would have only taken Patrick 20 points to beat the Patriots. That's it. That's such a low bar of what you're asking from your offense. But all of that was predicated on the offensive line is going to be kind of in the middle. Mm-hmm. They're going to be kind of just okay, serviceable.
Right.
Hasn't been serviceable. Mm-hmm. If I had known at the time, hey, we're going to this is the deal. This is the actual deal. We're going to stack up skill talent everywhere, but the offensive line will be a total disaster during this guy's rookie year. I would have said, no, don't do that.
Some of that is just bad luck. They've had 10 guys on the O-line play at least 50 snaps. That's a rash of injuries that I'd like to say you couldn't see it coming, but I mean, you could see it coming, but it's just the odds of it happening are low. And, you know, he came into training camp saying, you know, at the end of training camp, he said, I cut guys who I ordinarily would keep because the depth of our O-line was too good. And now it gets tested and it's failed pretty dramatically. You know, I would say that, you know, especially at the two tackle positions, they just weren't at, I mean, I thought their swing tackle going into the season was Matt Pryor, who's now playing guard. Once Karan Amagaji came back, he became their swing tackle and he lasted, you know,
a game, I think, before he got hurt. Two, maybe.
Yeah, or one full game playing at tackle. So you're down to tackles number 4 and 5, and number 4 is Larry Borum, who hadn't really been able to practice in full for most of the season. It's bad.
He's a Ryan Pace holdover.
He is. He's one of like the 4 or 5. He's also great public education. Great public education by Larry Borum.
Braxton Jones, theoretically, it's not a guarantee, but he sounded today pretty good about coming back this week. He sounded optimistic, to say the least.
Yeah. And Darnell Wright practiced on Wednesday as well. That's okay. A step. Tevin Jenkins did not. Which brings us real quick to Nate Davis. Can we do that?
Yeah, by the way, so there have been some success stories in Ryan Poles and Ian Cunningham's time as far as the offensive line goes. Braxton Jones is a big success story. Mm-hmm. Tevin Jenkins, who could have been out of here
right. In
that first year, converting him to guard and getting really good play from him, even though he's got a lot of injuries.
You just named 2 Ryan Pace draft picks, you realize that?
Yeah.
Right? Yep.
No. He didn't. They didn't draft Braxton Jones.
Oh, I'm sorry. You named one.
Those are good player development success stories. There's been some big mistakes by Poles and Cunningham on the offensive line, too. And Nate Davis is the biggest one. Nate Davis is the biggest personnel error by this administration short of Chase Claypool. And
that's a big if.
it's so clear that they didn't have, they did one of two things, Pat. They either did not have the thorough and proper background on Nate Davis, or they did and said, we can fix him.
Yeah.
And whatever it was, I mean, just a disaster. Cut Wednesday, halfway through a three-year, $30 million deal, and they'll get out of basically the last year of that anyway. We all knew Nate Davis was going to get cut at the end of the season. I am surprised that they cut him during the season, that they cut him halfway through the season when they are hurting at offensive line and still didn't want this guy. And it very clearly connects to what happened Sunday morning.
The Bears had eight offensive linemen they were planning to carry on Sunday, and the reason it was that few was because of all of the injuries that they've had. Nate Davis, according to the Bears' telling, wakes up on Sunday morning, goes to the Andre Tucker, the trainer, and says, my back hurts. The Bears go, cool, why don't you go home where there are chairs, and we'll have to play without you.
Nate Davis, who I believe hadn't been on the injury report at all since September.
No, and this is a guy who, the big picture, I mean, this was the last straw, but the big picture problem with him was an inability to practice regularly and to be available for games. Some of it the Bears were willing to forgive last year. He had a death in the family. It cost him two games, and he had a couple of injuries. But, boy, I think the Bears sensed they were in trouble in his first voluntary minicamp. The first one, yeah, right see, after.
There was problems then.
Yeah, right after they gave him $30 million and $19 million guaranteed.
And just so you guys know, voluntary minicamp is voluntary, but it's very customary that you go to that, especially if you're a new player on a new team. It's very customary that you go to that unless you have a contract issue or an injury.
And he also had a workout bonus, which meant that he was getting paid if he wanted to show up here. The workout bonus was $250,000, Jason.
Man.
And he decided that he'd rather not be here for all of those. That day one or day 20 or whatever, that should have been a red flag.
They were still optimistic about Nate Davis in late August.
Yeah.
They're like, okay, Nate's starting to get it. Mm-hmm. Matt Eberflus sent him a pretty clear message of, you're going to lose your spot.
He said literally, I believe you can lose your starting job even when you're hurt, I believe was the quote.
And, yeah. And they saw that, right or wrong at the time, what they saw was a response to that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really problematic to me because I would have said even at that time, okay, even if Nate's not a starter, when he has played, he's been good.
Yeah.
Nate Davis, at minimum, is a really valuable piece as a backup if you mm-hmm. think you have somebody better. Still, he makes your team on talent.
You also got to pay him anyway.
Right. Right. But he makes your team on talent. They're saying at this point he's not worth anything
mm-hmm.
to them. And you have that error. You have Lucas Patrick, and I know some of this is Ryan Poles just getting who he can, and the first year is a burndown year, but the presentation of it was that Nate Davis was going to be kind of the hallmark offensive line acquisition for them, and that Lucas Patrick was going to be a huge difference maker for them at center, and man, those are two big strikeouts. And they've made very little investment on the offensive line other than that. It's Darnell Wright at right tackle, but they've not really drafted or spent on the offensive line other than that.
Yeah, using the number, 11 pick?
10, I
10
think.
On Darnell Wright. That's a pretty big investment. But, yeah, in the other places they haven't. And what's interesting is now, you know, Tevin Jenkins is in the last year of his deal. I think the Bears have figured out that Braxton Jones is somebody they can probably improve upon. So you think they'll try and do that. I mean, there's a world, Jason, and you know that I like to create these worlds, but there's a world where there are four starters in week – four of their five starters in week one next year are different.
I think there needs to be a lot of overhaul, and I know that's a priority for them is offensive right. and defensive line in the upcoming offseason. But if the offensive line was this bad and you couldn't see that, you know, that's going to be too late. Mm-hmm. That's you're really concerned at that point about have you damaged Caleb Williams by giving him such a bad offensive line.
And this is a guy who is healthy and walking around. We're only talking about the psychological damage right now.
For now.
In the second half of this season, there may be real physical damage here done to him too. If the Bears aren't careful, if the Bears don't get better at blocking, and if he doesn't learn to throw the ball away and to live to see another day.
Their final eight games are all against teams that are solid, or mm-hmm. solid to very good.
Mm-hmm.
Solid to championship contender in the Lions case, and maybe in the 49ers case if things start going there. Also, Pat, all remaining eight games are against teams that right now today are in the top half of the league in opponent passer rating.
Wow.
And some of those teams bring pressure, too. Some of those teams have really good pass rushes, like Minnesota.
They're also they've won – the remaining schedule has won something like 73% of their games. Just an unreal schedule.
It's an extremely tough schedule.
It is by far the hardest in the league. Jason, we just
have fun, Thomas Brown, by the way. Everything's been going this bad when they've been playing the Patriots and the Colts and whoever else. Like, now you get to deal with all of the good teams on your schedule.
I want to touch on two injury things real quick, and then we'll go. Montez Sweat out with an ankle injury. That may help explain why he had such a hard time getting back for the field goal spike before the field goal attempt in the second quarter. He's already dealing with a shin injury that was so bad that he missed the game before. So, you know, he's playing on one leg. And then we've got Jaquan Brisker, who's not going to play this week again,
mm-hmm.
and who suffered a concussion in week four. I'm starting to worry about his career. I think you and I talked about this.
Certainly about his season.
Yeah, I mean, that's... When you miss, I mean, if you're missing almost 2 months with a concussion, that's scary bad stuff. And that would be bad for the Bears, but it would be even worse for just Jaquan as a guy. That's obviously a scary thing.
Talked to him briefly this week, just seeing how he was doing, and I think he's pretty down about not playing. It's gonna be a challenge for him to figure out what his next move is. And for whatever you want to say, about Ryan Poles, he has shown a very human touch during his 3 years running the team, sometimes to his detriment, in my opinion, like mm-hmm. sticking with Matt Eberflus because of loyalty and
he believed
really liking the guy. And right. The Justin Fields trade, I think, you know, he didn't really owe Justin anything in that situation, even though he did then kind of take care of him. And I think that it will weigh legitimately on Ryan Poles, as valuable as Jaquan Brisker is. I think he's got a conscience, and he is at least going to make sure he steers Jaquan toward making a totally informed and sound decision, whatever that might be.
I think, to me, I just want these coaches, whether it's this year or next year, to, if Jaquan ends up playing and is cleared to play, to make sure that he plays in a way that doesn't risk further concussions. He's now had one in at least three seasons. Obviously, the way he plays football ain't working. And, you know, for a guy who relies on physicality, that's going to be hard. But you've got to make do somehow. And in a way that's not going to leave him in medical trouble for the rest of his life.
Incidentally, the hit that did this to him was an offensive player.
I think him. They both were
and
concussed.
Was fined for it. But I agree with you. And also, I mean, there's just been so much resistance to this by the players. And I don't know why, but the Guardian cap padded helmets that they are required to wear in practice, mm-hmm. so they're used to them, they have the option starting this season to wear them in games. And I don't know why somebody like Tua or Jaquan Brisker wouldn't do that.
Did you see that Achan wore one in the Dolphins game Monday night?
I didn't, but I've seen guys here and there. I think the Titans had a guy in the season opener right. That wore one against the Bears.
And ask me whether it looked silly.
Did it?
Yes, it absolutely
did. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, see, I thought the one in the Titans game, I thought from afar it didn't really look that crazy.
Who cares? Like, I know, try telling a 23-year-old nobody cares about appearances and they're not going to believe you, but boy, respect to the guys who do take those measures to try to protect themselves, because they're already in a business that they know is quite dangerous.
Montez Sweat took a lot of heat, by the way, for being offsides on that play, and it was costly. Yep. No doubt it was costly. What did you think of that?
I think they would have made the field goal either way. So, I mean, it's the difference between, what, a 31 and a 30, or 33 and a 38, something crazy, or something not crazy. I don't think it was, you know, the Bears had viral moments the previous couple of weeks, so I think we were all sitting there going, where's this viral moment this mm-hmm. week? And I don't think it quite rose to the level that the others did. It's not a good look, but I don't think it was a sign of anything the way maybe the DJ Moore thing was.
Yeah, there's no history there with Montez Sweat.
No.
With DJ, you have kind of this growing body of work that raises concerns. Montez Sweat is out there with two documented leg injuries
right.
and You see him visibly limping. Mm-hmm. And some people have said, I think that, he started limping once they threw the flag. I think it kind of lines up time wise, but I think if you've ever had an ankle injury, the hardest part about it is not running, it's stopping.
Yeah, right.
And Montez is trying to get across the line and stop in his position to be able to rush the quarterback. And that's why it looks the way it does. There is no history. There is no body of work on Montez Sweat that says that he's soft. And this, to me, is really the opposite. He's out there playing through two injuries.
Right, yeah.
We haven't heard from Montez yet as of this recording, but I'm sure we will.
Test Thursday,
it depends on if he practices.
Yeah,
He's out with the ankle injury, then I guess we won't have Tez Thursday.
Jason, we've gone on long enough. Usually we make our picks for the Packers game. Suffice to say, Packers across the board. I think there's a chance the Bears do show a little offensive life. It can't be any worse, right?
I like Thomas Brown better than Shane Waldron, but it's just Matt Eberflus says he thinks that Thomas Brown can change things, quote, significantly.
Yeah.
Man, that's so much to ask. That is really difficult. And Green Bay is probably a top 10 to 15 defense. Pretty good.
Coming off a bye. Yeah.
Very well rested. I just can't see that. I can't see that working out for the Bears. Maybe some things will look better. I think a best case scenario for the Bears would be Caleb Williams looks sharper.
Mm-hmm.
And you're still probably going to lose. I would pick Packers 24, Bears 13.
Yeah, check out the Sun Times for all of our picks. I'm probably somewhere in there, maybe 21-16, something like that. Jason, that'll do it. We will be back again on Sunday. Until then, people can follow us on Twitter. Check us out at the Sun Times website or pick up a newspaper if you live in town. For Mark Potash, Jason Leisure, I'm Patrick Finley. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back again real soon.